This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 4022 for Tuesday, the 2nd of January, 2024. Today's show is entitled, Dumping ROMs for Fun and Profit. It is hosted by Brian in Ohio and is about 17 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is using forth to do something useful.
Public Radio, Brian in Ohio here. I'm out from under my rock. And before I start into the meat of this show, I wanted to mention a couple of things. First off, I was listening to the No Agenda show. If you don't know what the No Agenda show, it's a twice weekly media deconstruction podcast, link in the show notes. And I heard Pokey was at one of their meetups. They have meetups all over the world. And Pokey was at one in whatever local area he lives in. And all I have to say, Pokey, if you have time to do a No Agenda meetup, you probably have time to record a show for HPR. Enough said. Second one was the episode that I recorded about the Z80 membership card. Got the link to that show got posted on a site called Two Stop Bits. Two Stop Bits is a kind of a hacker news kind of news. People throw links up and things that they think are appropriate and interesting. And Two Stop Bits is about retro computing. And so that show ended up there. And a guy, I'm assuming it's a guy, BX Parks, he left a comment, and his comment was that he doesn't like podcasts. He thinks they're too slow for the data. He gives some words per minute stuff. And that's fine. That's his opinion. He then proceeds to write a long post about the Z80 membership card. And he then I go to another site, and there's somebody that posted something about forth, the language forth. And he posted there that he thought forth was terrible, that it's unusable. And not only that, nobody ever does anything useful with forth. So this episode is about me doing something useful with forth. And what it is dumping the PROM from an old 1990s single board computer. And this continues my mania of trying to learn more about Z80 computers and eventually building my own Z80 computer. I know it's nothing new, but I've never done it, so it's new to me. And I also, there's no episodes about this in HPR from what I can tell. So I got this device via eBay, Kijiji for people up in Canada, and I paid $20 US. That's about $700 Canadian and for the device. And it's a cool little computer. It's got sort of a cyber deck kind of feel to it. It's got actually a kind of a decent keyboard. It's got a little one line character LCD that's not very good. And it's got a port for adding cartridges. It's got some built-in programming. It's got some games and some a typing tutor. It has a basic interpreter on it, so you can actually do some programming on it. And so to me, it's a device that seems like it would be cool to do some changes. Mostly, the first thing I would love to do is swap out that single line LCD for maybe a 20 by 4, or even I've got some 4 by 40 character LCDs, big ones. Something like that would make it kind of cool, and then figure out how to store files on some other peripheral, et cetera, et cetera. So the place to start with a device like this, well, there's a million places to start. The place I decided to start was to figure out what the underlying programming, what's built into the device. And when I opened it up, I'm not surprised. It's got some read-only memory, which has what I was pretty sure would have all of the code necessary to run all of the games and all that stuff. And so when I looked at the device, and it's a very neatly laid out single-sided PC board, and all of the devices, there's no There's no secret devices, nothing with names scratched off like they do now, because this was in the 90s when people were cool. And so the PROM on the device, and yes, it's a PROM, is a TC53100CP. So first off, PROMs. So PROM is a kind of read-only memory. The difference between a ROM and a PROM is a ROM is manufactured with the code built in, whereas a PROM is a sort of a generic device that is programmed, but can only be programmed one time. And unlike other, you're probably more, what you hear about more now is EEPROMs, you know, where they're electrically erasable PROMs. So you can read them, write them, erase them, put new stuff on them. This is not that kind of device. It's a one-time done, once programmed, and that's done. But fortunately, it's a pretty easy pin to access to. It's in a DIP package, dual inline package, a 28-pin device. And there are all kinds of EEPROM readers out there. Some of them are pricey, some of them are less pricey. You can make your own, and that's what I did with this because there's really no way that I could see easily to find something to be able to read what's off of this device. With an Arduino, some Forth code, some wires, you can dump an EEPROM, and this is how I did it. First thing I did was I used an Arduino Mega running FlashForth. It's the same Arduino Mega that I was using to do some of the Z80 timing stuff that I did a couple few episodes ago. And excuse me, the reason I would use an Arduino Mega is because it's got lots and lots of ports, lots and lots of I/O, and I needed it because this device is a 28-pin device. Like I said, it's actually has a 17-bit address space, so it has 1 megabit of memory on the device. That's megabit, not megabyte. Which is ranged in 128K of 8-bit bytes. So the device has normally a 16-bit address bus. You'd be able to access 64K of some kind of memory. Because it's got that extra bit, it doubles that. And so I was kind of thinking that this is somehow divided into two pages of ROM, and the processor would access that in two different ways, is what I'm thinking as I get started here. But to figure that out, we're going to need to dump the PROM. So what I desoldered the PROM from the board. I put a socket there so I could put it back on the board. And then actually dumping the ROM with the interactive nature of Forth was pretty straightforward. Just took a little bit of a programming session, but the way it would work, I saw from the data sheet of the device, you need to set an address, a valid address, and then you would enable the chip with the chip enable signal, and then it outputs data on the data bus, which is an 8-bit bus, and then you could read the data. So what I ended up doing, the tricky parts was actually the physical wiring. There was a lot of wires to get this thing hooked up from. So there's a wire I had to wire it up by port, and the ports on the Arduino Mega are kind of crammed together. And I've got a picture in the show notes, so it's kind of a wiry mess. But got it wired up, and then there was the next kind of fiddly part was some of the timing issues. The Arduino Mega goes actually pretty fast at 16 megahertz for a device of this vintage. And so I had to work out some of the delays and timing of when to put, how long to wait after settling the address bus to enable the chip to read the data. And I just took a little experimenting. With the interactive nature of Forth, it was really easy to do. And once I got settled on some good values, delay values, I hard coded that into the program. And then I was able to start reading the data off of the chip. And what it does is it puts an address on the bus, does that chip enable signal, puts it on the data bus. The The Arduino reads that bit of data from the data port, and then it outputs it to the serial terminal. And then you go through the whole address space, and you can get every byte of code. Now, that's written out in ASCII text. But what's on the chip is actually hexadecimal, right? It's binary, and so there's a little bit more to this than just capturing it that way. Once I saw that I was getting reliable data, and what I mean by that is I could read it once and read it again and read it again, and I was getting the same data out. I figured at that point, if it's getting the same thing every time, it's probably working. It's either perfectly broken or perfectly working. So I was optimistic and thought it would be perfectly working. And then I just modified the fourth code to output the data on the serial terminal as Intel hex file format. If you don't know what Intel hex file format is, listen to the last show I did. If you don't like eSpeak, you can read about it in Wikipedia. And if you don't like that, I'll just tell you that basically what it is it takes binary data, turns it into ASCII text, and shoots it out to something on a file so that you get a readable code, a readable record that's in ASCII. And that's what I did. This thing went through, I think I did 16 bytes at a time, created each record with a proper checksum and the proper header, and it would go on to the next bytes all the way through the address space, creating this large hexadecimal file. I'll put a snippet of that in the show notes, but not the whole thing. It's pretty big. And then it just spit that out onto the serial terminal. Now, you can use any kind of serial terminal to do this. You can use Minicom or PuTTY or whatever people would use on Windows or Mac. I have no idea. But anyway, I use actually Emacs. Emacs has a built-in serial terminal mode, and I just use Emacs to dump out the data into a nice file, and then I just copied and pasted that and saved it as an Intel hex file with a .hex ending on the file. That's it. Once I did that a few times, it actually took about an hour to dump all this data and write it out to the serial term. I did it a couple times and verified it using diff to make sure it was the same stuff. Did it actually probably about 3 or 4 times, to be honest. And it actually was spitting out the same data every time. And so I was happy with that. And then I just saved it to a file in 2 pages. Page 1 with that upper byte set at 0, 8, and then the second time through with the upper byte set at 1. And now you've got an Intel hex file. What can you do with that? There's a tool called Hex2Bin, and it's a tool used for converting hexadecimal files, either Motorola or Intel format, into binary files. And you need a binary file to be able to disassemble it, to turn it, because the binary file is the machine code, and the machine code was created by an assembly program. And you write out assembly code, the assembler assembles it into machine code, and you end up with a binary file that you upload to in this case, the manufacturer of this device uploaded to this PROM. What I'm trying to do is the reverse. I've got now a binary file, and I want it to turn back into that assembly language program so that I can do some analysis. And so first step was to turn that Intel hex file that I created with a fourth device, doing something useful with fourth. And I then took that hex file, ran it through Hex2Bin, and that created a binary file. Now, then you take that binary file and you have to run it through a tool called a disassembler, and there aren't a lot of Z80 disassemblers out there, at least not for Linux. But there is one. It's called Z80 DASM. It's in the show notes, and I ran that binary file through that disassembler, and it generated what looks like reasonable assembly code. It's a big program, and You have to also, when you're using a disassembler, you have to recognize that it's guessing at all the values, and some of the values that it thinks are valid, they are actually valid opcodes for the Z80, but really they're just data. And so you have to sort of, luckily this, you then, after you've disassembled it, you can use another program to look at that disassembled file, and you can see it'll have your hex code, your assembly code on one side, and then it'll have hex code on the other side, and you can kind of make guesses at what's data and what's not data. Some of it's easy, some of it's text, and you can say, oh, that's definitely text, that's data, but some of it's probably numbers or something, I'm not sure. It's going to take a while to figure that out. In that light, there's another tool called Ghidra. Ghidra is a product of the NSA, and it actually, for some reason, the NSA decided that the Z80 processor is a worth supporting in their tool, which is a huge tool. And they maybe they're disassembling old Game Boy cartridges, because that's all Z80 stuff. Anyway, so Ghidra is out there as another way of analyzing that binary file, and so. And that's where I'm at now. I've got a couple of tools to work through this code. The goal for me now is to find some entry point into the code that has that where I can see where key presses are being captured, where data is being sent to the LCD. And then after that, I'm going to have to figure out some kind of something to replace that PROM. Some kind of EEPROM. I'm gonna probably have to make a little board or something to make it fit the right to fit the pinout. But other than that, shouldn't be too hard. And then I can start uploading new code and seeing how it files. I would really like to be able to figure out how that LCD works, what port it's using, and then put on something more standard. Because there's all kinds of LCD drivers out there that are the Z80 can use. So that's what I'm trying to do right now. So there'll be updates on the project as it progresses. I did reinstall that PROM back into the device. The device still works, so that didn't damage it or anything. It was in the process. And so that's where I'm at. Beginning of something new, some more learning, and hopefully some more HPR episodes. So thanks for listening. This is Brian in Ohio signing off, and I just want to remind everybody, the best way to make a fire with two sticks is to make sure one of them is a match. Goodbye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.